You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
This October, the Big Apple Circus will open its latest season at Lincoln Center with an original production called Luminosity. But you won't find its founder and longtime ringmaster, Paul Binder, at the center of the ring. That's because, although he continues to work with the show behind the scenes, he retired his top hat and tails in 2009. In a new memoir, he's called Never Quote the Weather to a Sea Lion and Other Uncommon Tales from the founder of the Big Apple Circus. The former ringmaster reflects on his time inside and outside the ring and what it's like to work with a cast of clowns, acrobats, and elephants, among others. It's published by Author House, and I'm very pleased it has brought Paul Binder back to our show. Hello.
Hi, Leonard. How are you?
I'm well. The Big Apple Circus got its name from the city where it started, obviously. Weren't other circuses already well-established as regular visitors, like Ringling Brothers, Barnum & Bailey?
Oh, yes. In fact, that's what people call the circus, was Ringling Brothers and Barnum & Bailey. So we were a surprise when all of a sudden we arrived at Battery Park City, when it was still a landfill, and we put up our tent, and people were saying, well, what's this? There was a lot of big question marks.
And what did you hope to do differently?
Say again?
What did you hope to do differently?
Well, I had the wonderful experience of being in the circus in Europe, in France. I was recruited into the circus in France as a comedy juggler. And suddenly I saw this theatrical form that was unique, totally unique, this intimate theatrical form where the audience surrounded the performers. And the whole notion of a circus was a circle. And I was compelled to bring it back here.
But we've had them in this country as well. Haven't we had one-ring circuses touring the country over the
years? Well, way back. But they were pretty much disappeared by the, you know, not long after the turn of the century, the three-ring circuses really took over. Became a uniquely American form.
So had a new circus of this ambition been staged in New York City?
Not to my knowledge. It had been at least 50 years before anybody had done anything like that.
And you did in Battery Park? What year was that?
It was actually Battery Park City before they built on it. Mm-hmm. It was landfill. So that was 1977.
And you didn't last long there because they were going to build on it?
Well, yeah. But they moved us then over. The second year we were on the old 8th Avenue and 50th Street, where the old Madison Square Garden was, which was a parking lot. And then by the third
and
year...
And Ed Koch helped you get that location?
Yeah, Ed Koch's people helped that. And by the third year, we were asked to come and perform in Damrosch Park in Lincoln Center. And the rest, as they say, is history.
And
we did a good enough show so that they said, hey, this really belongs in a more prestigious place.
But I've always wondered about being in Damrosch Park because... you're in an area where there's a lot of activity. The Metropolitan Opera's moving in sets and everything. And then you have, all of the various Lincoln Center venues. And then on top of it all, you're in Midtown, and you're bringing elephants and stuff in there.
Absolutely. And we live in, when we're there, in RV trailers as well. So we have the fanciest address in New York City next door to the Metropolitan Opera. You know, on one side we have the New York City Ballet, the other side we have the Metropolitan Opera. But it's been an enormous success at Lincoln Center. Both Lincoln Center and the people of New York have accepted the Big Apple Circus as something special, cultural event.
Do you do that parade where you march elephants through Midtown?
No, I'm afraid we've never done that.
But that's what they do in all the small town circuses.
They do. They bring them from wherever the rail siding is to wherever the circus is. But no, we never did that. Although we did have an elephant on the Staten Island ferry once. I recall that. It was the first time we decided to take the circus to Staten Island. So you figure, how do you get to the circus on Staten Island? Well, you take the ferry. And sure enough, they let us take an elephant across on the ferry.
Where do you keep your animals normally?
Well, it depends. We have a quarters up near Newburgh, New York, what we call a summer or winter quarters, and there are wonderful stabling facilities up there mainly for horses. Nowadays, it's horses and dogs and an occasional camel or llama or, you know, like that.
Well, you don't have lions and tigers.
No, we never did. We never did. Always working animals. So that, you know, animals that work with people.
You're actually the co-founder of the Big Apple Circus. Michael Christensen was your original partner?
Michael and I first met in the San Francisco Mime Troupe in the early 70s. And we discovered we enjoyed juggling with one another. We were taught how to juggle in the mime troupe. It was part of our training there. And we created a juggling act. And we took it 1 year. After being there for 3 years, we decided, well, we're going to give this a try and see if we can make our living just juggling. And we met in England and toured all the way across Europe, juggling on the streets, on street corners, all the way to Istanbul. And then we finally returned to Paris, and that's where we got recruited into a French circus.
Now, busking is a respectable way to make a living in much of Europe, but
perhaps it is now. But then there were very few of us, and I will tell you what, we did get to meet the constabulary in just about every city we went to.
And you mentioned Corfu, Greece, being a particularly difficult situation for
yes,
you.
Yes, for those.
This
of
is when the colonels were in power.
The regime of the colonels, it was called, and it was not a friendly environment for street performers, and we did get arrested in Corfu.
And what did they charge you with? Juggling without a license?
I never did find out, but we were arrested when we had a routine where we would put a cigar in a volunteer's mouth, you know, one of these tipped cigars, and then we would put him between us and juggle around him until we got close enough so we could knock the cigar out of his mouth. So I think we were arrested for mistreatment of tobacco. I'm not exactly sure. But they told us, get off this island. We don't want to ever see you again, and don't ever juggle in this country again.
Well, so many of the circus performers we see are from Europe, often Eastern Europe. Is the circus no matter where you go?
It truly a universal form. I mean, you can find circuses in India and Japan and China and so on. It's a universal form. So, and performers do travel the circuit, you know. Most of the ones from here who perform here are from Eastern Europe or from Latin America. There's some very good circus performers come out of Latin
America.
Well,
you say you were invited to appear at the Nouveau Cirque de Paris. Is that similar to what you wound up doing with the Big Apple?
Oh, definitely. We modeled our first ring and tent after the Nouveau Cirque de Paris. It was an extraordinary experience to suddenly be in this environment surrounded by an audience who just were laughing and shouting and screaming and, you know, having a great time. And I said, we have nothing like this in America.
And since it doesn't really depend on words, funny is funny, whether you're in France or Bulgaria or New York.
Although we did some talking, you know. We butchered, when we were working in France, we butchered the French language. And oddly enough, we were the only Americans that they really enjoyed butchering their language. But
While you were in France, you and Michael met James Baldwin and the great French actress Simone Signoret. And Michael got into a heated argument with them?
She did. Somehow Simone decided that Michael must be a method actress. So she went after him because, of course, she wasn't. You know, it was not acting was more of a mechanical process to her than this deep internal process. And he started arguing. And there he was arguing with the grand dame of French cinema, Simone Signoret, about acting, of all things. And I sort of had to quiet them down. And when I said, didn't you know who those people were? That was James Baldwin and Simone Signoret. He said, I had no idea. I said, next time I'll kick you under the table.
Well, James Baldwin invited you and Michael to stay at his house.
Yeah, wonderful house in Saint-Paul-de-Vence in the south of France, in Provence. Mm-hmm. And he said, come stay for a while. You know, it was a pleasure. He was a great man and a great writer. I would hear him typing. You know, he was using a typewriter in those days at, you know, 2, 3 in the morning in his office. And so I was a witness to history as Baldwin was writing his novels.
Well, he was one of the most brilliant essayists, along with being a pretty terrific novelist.
Yeah.
But did you get into those kinds of conversations?
We talked about everything. I mean, I was sort of more like a fly on the wall listening to Simone and him at lunch talking about everything there was in the world, you know. It was a wonderful experience for a young guy.
My guest is Paul Binder. His book, Never Quote the Weather to a Sea Lion and Other Uncommon Tales from the Founder of the Big Apple Circus, has a foreword by Glenn Close, who I guess we can be grateful never got into a fight with Simone Signoret about acting.
No. That would have been an interesting fight, though. Those were two great actresses. But Glenn's foreword is so delightful. She was so, you know, kind about it. She offered to write a foreword to my book.
Is she somebody who comes to the circus often?
She comes, brings her grandchildren now. She's a fan of the circus. I think it all started when she was in the musical Barnum, and I got to train her how to juggle. That's how we got to know one another. So she got to appreciate the circus from that perspective.
Well, most of the people who perform in circuses in this country grow up in circus families, don't they? And then they learn how to do the skills in Florida somewhere with Ringling Brothers. But you got an MBA from Columbia.
Yes,
you went to Dartmouth
as
an undergrad.
Yes.
They don't teach circus at those schools.
No, I'm teaching them now is what's happening.
So you had no dream of running away and joining the circus when you were
a kid? None whatsoever. I was in the Dartmouth Players at Dartmouth, and I loved being on stage. And that led to my being in the San Francisco Mime Troupe, where I learned how to juggle, and then discovered circus through that means. And it's been nothing but a wonderful experience ever since.
It's a
24/7 job, but
But you also worked for Julia Child for a while.
I did. Right out of college, I got a job at WGBH Television in Boston. It was the early days of Julia Child, and before I knew it, I was just 21 years old, and I was the floor manager for the show.
Picking up the chicken from the floor?
Well, amongst other things, yes. Whatever it takes, you know. But anyway, my first day as floor manager, and remember, I'm 12 feet in front of her. I'm just right next to the camera that's right in front of her. The director says over the headset to me, "Tell her she's sweating, Paul." Oh, my God, how am I going to put this personal, very, embarrassing, potentially embarrassing question to her. And I wrote one word on a paper pad, perspiration. And I held it up for her to see. And a moment later, she mopped her brow with a dishcloth. And I said to myself, I got that right, And then I counted her down at the end of the show, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, out. She walked over to me. And I remember she was taller than I am. She was 6'2". And she wrapped me in a big hug, and she said, "Paul, where I come from, they call it sweat." I said, where I come from, they call it that, too. But she was a great pleasure to work for and a great leader. She loved being a part of the team and leading the team. So I learned a lot from Julia, just being in her presence.
So when you decide to start a circus, what do you do? Who do you call?
Well,
do you get the tent first, or do you start lining up acts?
The answer is you call anyone you can. You just get around and pass the word around that you have this idea to create a cultural institution, performing arts, and community service combined with community service. We have 5 award-winning community programs, including our clown care unit, which goes to the bedsides of acutely and chronically ill children in the city and across the country, indeed. And we just began to link up one person with another. Who shall we see? This one, that one. The printer of our proposal gave us an idea to see someone in the governor's office, for example. And that led to meeting some other people and so on. One led to the other. And it was a compelling idea. I mean, it was like this kid from Brooklyn just, I was selling them all the Brooklyn Bridge and they were going to buy it. So the gratifying part is it's become this wonderful part of the New York City cultural scene. And people just accept it as their own in New York.
I think it's important that it's also a child-friendly circus.
Yeah. We say family entertainment because there's no doubt in our minds the adults love it too. But families come together. 3-4 generations sometime of a family will come to the Big Apple Circus.
Although I've always wondered why some children are really afraid of clowns.
Yeah, it's rare, but we do find that.
It bursts into tears sometimes.
I think that there's a very primal reason why that happens with some people, and it has to do with the size of the character. In fact, clown makeup is meant to be a mask, it's a person writ large. And they have big feet, and so on.
Big noses.
In many cases, big noses. So I think that's part of what happens. Perhaps a child at a young age sees that mask and gets frightened by it.
It's rare,
I must tell you, Leonard. I mean, we've encountered some people that way.
I've witnessed it a few times.
Have you really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is there any formula to casting a circus? For example, how many clown acts you'd have, whether you have to have dogs walking on their hind legs and jumping through hoops or not?
Well, yeah, I think the first rule is to find a variety of different genres, you know. So you can show the audience the spectrum of what we're capable of doing as human beings. And you look for the virtuoso performers. And in the case of the Big Apple Circus, this is equally as important, performers that can make contact with the audience. So when they're not some distant superheroes like they might be in Madison Square Garden. No, they're people like you and I who do extraordinary things. And that's the message, how all human beings are capable of doing extraordinary things.
Because the audience is so close to the performers.
Yeah, yeah.
You married Katja Schumann, a member of one of the world's most respected circus families. Did your two children travel with you when the circus was on?
Oh, yes. And indeed, they performed in the circus because they wanted to. It was the family business, after all. So, you know, each of them came to me and asked, could they be in the show? And once we came to the agreement that they would do their homework and their chores, they could be in the show. We found ways of doing it.
And I'm assuming it was that you knew from the start that you'd be doing double duty. You would be the ringmaster along with all your other chores.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure. And I loved being the ringmaster. It gave me an opportunity to be in touch with the audience, in contact with the audience, and to share this growing knowledge I had about how the circus could touch them. And so I would frame things in that way. It was great fun doing that. I'd still be doing it if it hadn't been a 24/7 job for, you know, 30 years. So
didn't you accidentally call on Robert De Niro during one show?
I would pitch the program, the souvenir program, at the end of the first half. And the first thing I would do is find somebody in the front row who had a program and say, may I borrow that? And I'd show it to the audience, ask them their name and show it to the audience. Well, I saw one in the front row. I picked it up. I said, may I borrow that? And the guy said yes. And I said, I turned to him and I said, what's your name, sir? And as I stuck the microphone into his face, I went, it's Robert De Niro. And he said very calmly, Bobby. And I said, thank you, Bobby. And then I pitched the program. he came backstage afterwards, and I apologized. He said, no, don't worry about it. I just want to see the flying trapezist. He knew Tito Gaona, the flying trapezist, in the show.
But didn't he also say, I'll tell you where I'm sitting next time so you don't come over?
Yeah.
You've had some other famous faces perform as guests.
Oh, yeah.
You got Robin Williams to perform as a clown?
Robin Williams did the clown trip in the ring. The amazing thing was that he went backstage after he killed the audience. They were laughing hysterically at his character that he created in the ring. And all he wanted to know, was I any good? And probably the most famous of all was Paul Newman, who was in the ring. And he did a routine, clown school, in which he did the clown. He came in dressed as a clown.
Did the audience know that it was Robin Williams or Paul Newman?
They didn't recognize Robin, but they did recognize Paul because you can't disguise his eyes. And anyway, it was a benefit, and they knew he was in the audience. So it was they put those eyes together in the ring, and there he was. So he did the clown trip. He landed on, you know, and everybody cheered, and I revealed it was Paul Newman, and the audience cheered, and out he went. Well, the next year I called him saying, hey, would you like to be in the show again, Paul? It was great last year. And he said, not on your life. I said, oh, really? He said, do you know I broke my elbow when I did the clown trip? How many of you out there can say you broke Paul Newman's elbow?
We always had
you know, a lot of actors and celebrities come to the Big Apple. So we're right here in New York City.
You have a theme each year. This year it's luminosity.
That's luminosity with a C for city.
Ah, your website says it will celebrate the vitality of life at the crossroads of the world.
Yeah.
Now, don't all of your shows do that?
It's a Times Square show. Ah. It's set in Times Square. So.
Do your performers have to come up with new acts each year to reflect the theme?
Well, we have two classes of performers. We have guest artists who bring their own act, and then we costume it, create music for it, light it in our special way. And then we have company artists, and company artists do create new material each year. They're very good generalists, the best we can find. And what's nice about working for the Big Apple Circus as a company artist is you have an ongoing contract. So you don't have to jump all over the world and join different circuses all over the world. But those people do create new material every year.
And do they ever improvise?
Only to a small extent. You know, part of it is the coordination between the music and the lighting, for example, and the act itself. It's very important to heighten the sensibility of what we're doing.
I've always felt that if a circus is to succeed, they better hire a good drummer.
Oh, we have the best. Yeah, Sam Wiley is our drummer, and he's the best, simply the best. And what's wonderful about Sam is he never takes his eyes off the ring. I mean, he's a wonderful musician, and he's with the artists all the way. Pleasure to have him.
Now, you're no longer working as the ringmaster, but I assume you still have all of the a lot of things to cope with, mishaps during a show, sensitive egos on some of the performers. And then there's the whole matter of keeping the thing going financially. But what about when there's a mishap?
I don't think there's many people who realize Big Apple Circus is a not-for-profit institution with a large community programming part of our makeup. And so we're always having to support those community programs.
And you tell the story of Mayor Bloomberg telling his bodyguards, hang on to your wallets, guys, when he was meeting you at an event.
The Bloomberg LP over the years has bought tickets to the Big Apple, or whole shows for their employees and their guests and so on. And, of course, we do a lot of fundraising. So Mike Bloomberg was very aware of the fact that we like to pick his pocket as much as possible. They are still, by the way, supporting the Big Apple Circus, Bloomberg.
Well, let's see what happens and after he's out of office.
He has been a guest for several times in the ring, you know, as a guest ringmaster.
What happens when someone gets hurt or accidentally falls or an animal fails to do what's expected?
Well, you know, we obviously make every effort to minimize risk. You have to do the same thing at 8:20 every night, and you have to be able to stay within the boundaries of risk. Occasionally, though, we've had accidents, you know, a twisted ankle, a broken arm or whatever.
A major movie star.
Yeah, major movie star breaks his elbow. That's right. And you learn to figure out how you're going to build the show without that person for that period of time. What's interesting is circus performers recover quickly. They want to be in the ring. It gives them the motivation to recover quickly. But you know what's interesting, and I'm knocking wood as I say it, this desk here is, listen everybody, that was me knocking wood.
Yeah, it's fake wood.
We have not had many serious accidents over the years. It's a first rule is, the first issue is safety, and then after that you begin working on the process.
Now, you've retired as the ringmaster, and your longtime clown has retired just this year, right?
Yeah. The year before last, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Grandma.
Grandma the Clown, yeah, who was a wonderful favorite of our audiences for years and years.
But you've only retired as ringmaster. Do you think you'll be doing this forever?
I am. I'm on the board of directors. I'm the senior advisor, which means they ask my opinion, I give it, they ignore it, and they pay me. But, you know, it's a good job. And it's a pleasure. It's a pleasure having a little more time and space. It gave me the time to write Never Quote the Weather to a Sea Lion and Other Uncommon Tales from the Founder of the Big Apple Circus.
Well, we're pretty much at the end of this conversation, but I have to ask you about that title. Do people ever quote the weather to a sea lion?
Well, it's because of a time I was announcing the Sea Lion Act. We had these two wonderful sea lions, big, you know, like a 600-pound Patagonian sea lion and a little California sea lion in an act that came to us from Switzerland. And they lived in a big tank out in the backyard behind the tent. And one day I'm announcing them, and it was raining. And the performance director said to me, "No, Mr. Paul, they're not coming in. It's raining. It's raining." So I said to the audience, "Well, none of us like the rain, and I guess the sea lions don't either, but they won't be here right now. Let's move on to the next act." And then during the intermission, I asked the trainer, I said, "What do you mean? Sea lions don't go out in the rain?" He said, No. It wasn't the rain. He said, people walking by with umbrellas, he thought they were big domed head monsters, you know, and they didn't want any part of that. They weren't going to come out of that tank. Fortunately, it stopped raining. People put away their umbrellas, and then we put on the Sea Lion Act in the second half of the show. But that it was a natural for a title of a book.
And it reveals that sea lions can be frightened off by people with umbrellas.
Yeah. Oh, listen. If you ever want to frighten your sea lion, you can always come with an umbrella.
Paul Binder's book is Never Quote the Weather to a Sea Lion and Other Uncommon Tales from the Founder of the Big Apple Circus. It is published by Author House.
You can get it on Amazon.com.
Of course. Yeah. We can get everything on Amazon.com.
If you name it, you can get it.
Now even the Washington Post. Thank you so much for being on our show today.
It's a pleasure, Leonard. I love listening to you.
Okay.